Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dune Grim Show and co-produced, sort of, by Mr. I-V-E-S-T. I'm the Dude.
And I am Grim, and today we are going to talk about Tidal by Fiona Apple, which I don't have a copy of, unfortunately.
Dude, I tell you what, man, not a lot of people have a copy of it. Like this, I forget, I think this was 2017 or 2018.
Yeah, that was the first time.
I read that. That
was really interesting to me because even though the 90s wasn't, I think people were still pressing vinyl, but I feel like it was probably a really niche thing.
It was on its way down.
Yeah. But even so, I mean, this seems like it would have been a big enough release that maybe they would have done that. But even so, the fact that it didn't happen until 17 is kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it was hard to get. Like,
oh, really?
This is through Vinyl. It's through Vinyl Me Please. And you can't get it on their, like, it's sold out on the website. They had a special event when I lived in Denver. And they grabbed, like, the guy grabbed a couple. He's like, oh, yeah, I just grabbed some leftovers from the warehouse. Because, like, one of the corners is kind of, like, bent, like, the top corner. And so they were probably like, oh, yeah, we don't want to ship this one. I was like, I'll take it.
Wow.
So, that's thank cool. Thank you, Vinyl Me Please.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, this is a pretty wild album that, I mean, one released in 96. She was born in 77. That puts her at about 18 years old, man. 19 years old 19, when this was recorded. Well, she was born September 13th. This was released July 23rd.
Oh, okay. So, correct. Yeah.
For those of you scoring at home. Actually, I did have to count on, I had to count on my fingers to like do the math on that.
You actually did that. I just went by the year, so you win.
I got to the numbers.
Yeah.
But dude, I just couldn't believe that. I mean, I knew she was young, but wow, man, this is just such mature content.
Yeah,
she sounds mature.
Yeah, she really does. Like her voice does. But that was one thing I was going to mention is the way it's written is very adult. However, a lot of these were just songs that she put together that she had written throughout her teens, which even more, I was like very kind of taken aback by how good that writing is for such a young person.
Yeah.
Lyrically. Yeah, not just the,
yeah,
the music is great too, but I mean the lyrical content.
Yeah. To have that perspective at such a young age and be able to articulate it in such a mature fashion is pretty exceptional. Now we won't get into the details that she did have a traumatic incident when she was about 12 years old. And you can imagine going through something like that would definitely age you a little bit. You have to grow up pretty fast.
Yeah.
It's really, really unfortunate. But she seems to be pretty open about talking about it. And, you know, anyone can do research about it and whatnot. But it's interesting because she said that hasn't. In an interview I saw with I believe it was Matt Pinfield when
120 MTV minutes.
When MTV was still a thing.
A good thing, at least.
A good thing, anyways. Yeah. You know, she kind of said that, you know, it really doesn't, you know, she doesn't let those that incident and whatnot like influence her music and her writing. Now, if you take a deep dive, it may come out in certain ways, but, there's some, you know, this is a very relationship heavy album, you know.
I thought the same. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And mainly it sounded like, at least from what I read, it was mainly about one real boyfriend or relationship at that point. But, it sounded at least somewhat toxic. And again, for someone being at that age to realize it and being able to articulate, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, in that way, for sure. Now, one thing that is kind of interesting to me is, so she was classically trained as a pianist from a young age. So she had a lot of chops on the piano. So undoubtedly wrote the songs and the vocals on piano and just had these songs. But based on how she described it as just sort of a hodgepodge of these different things that she's written or had written, I think it's interesting. An interesting job for a producer, and the producer of this album, who I don't honestly know from a lot of other stuff, but Andrew Slater, I think did a good job of doing some things with his sort of guidance of instrument placement and kind of creating a sound that to me sounds very cohesive throughout the album. Even if it is sort of just a collection of things she'd written, it sounds like it belongs together.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the, you know, just from listening to this, you know, that obviously her vocals are very front and center as they should be. She has a magnificent voice, a great range. She's able to, you know, sing very soft and light, but man, she can bring it.
Yeah.
And she can bring it with some attitude too.
And it just doesn't go with the cover of the record. Just this young girl's face, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. But it's kind of funny. Cause if you look at the cover, it's, the cool thing about it, it's like it's out of focus and everything.
It's not her whole face.
Yeah, it's not her whole face. And it's like, man, it, you know, on the back, yeah, you get a little more there. But
her eyes are very piercing.
Oh, very, very, absolutely. And I don't think they're contacts. I think them's real. So
she didn't have the ones like the guitars from Limp Bizkit where they're all black.
I don't think so. Right. No, she wasn't in that phase
yet. Yeah, that's good. Thank God.
But now let me ask you this. Did you read or there's a musician who plays, I think it's not the majority, but a lot of the other stuff on this album named John Bryan, B-R-I-O-N.
Yeah.
And do you know anything about him?
I actually don't. So if you could enlighten me.
I will try my best. So plays on this album, he plays multitude of instruments, but he plays the guitar, the vibraphone, tack piano, and the marimba. Now, he has also scored such films as Heart Eight, which is Paul Thomas Anderson's debut film, Punch Drunk Love, another Paul Thomas Anderson film, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and a little film called I Heart Huckabees.
Ooh, wow.
So he's done some really good stuff. And, you know, as you know, like later, Fiona Apple ended up dating Paul Thomas Anderson.
I was going to say, was that sort of the catalyst for that connection?
It could be. I mean, from my understanding, Paul Thomas Anderson did a photo shoot for Fiona Apple, and that's kind of how they met. But you can imagine them getting kind of connected and hooked up like through this person also, right?
Yeah.
Because in the 90s, I mean, here's the thing. I forget. I don't know exactly when they started dating. But, you know, I'm trying to think when Heart Eight and when Boogie Nights and then Magnolia came out. I think Magnolia was 99. So okay. Boogie Nights. And so Paul Thomas Anderson, he was known, I guess, in the industry. But yeah, Eternal Sunshine and I Heart Huckabees. That's pretty cool. I could hang my head on that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. I did not know that. That is rather interesting. But when you look at the list of instruments that he played, and so knowing that, knowing what his contribution was to the record, it kind of falls into place and makes sense. Now, there were two instruments that he's credited for that you did not mention.
Yeah, probably because I didn't know how to say them or what they were.
Yes, so. And I was very interested to read this. Now, of course, when I heard this album more recently as an adult again, it's interesting because you kind of know what instruments are more. And I was going to comment that I really enjoyed the heavy use of the Mellotron. Mm-hmm. But he actually played what's called a Chamberlain. And I believe Chamberlain
I did read on that.
Was, I think, the predecessor to the Mellotron, but it operated off the same way where it's basically like the first sampler where it's like these little reels of tape.
Okay.
And the Optigan, now that is a really interesting one. It's a keyboard instrument that I think, I don't want to say became popular because I don't know how popular it ever was, but it came out in like the 70s. And dude, it's almost like a sampler with records. Like it has these little discs that you put in it, and the discs have instruments recorded on these different grooves or different tracks. And when you play the keys, it's sampling that.
No way.
Yeah, okay. And it's kind of kitschy. It's you wouldn't necessarily put it in the same group as a Mellotron in a way, even though it was trying to accomplish a similar thing, because I feel like the Mellotron was trying to be as pure as it could be. And the Octagon was kind of trying to do that, but a little silly, and had some, like some of them would just have like bands playing a little rhythm, which I guess some Mellotron settings had that. But anyways, I thought that was interesting because they made excellent use of those two instruments in this album.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. It's, you know, her, for the most part, you know, her vocals, the piano are pretty front and center. A lot of strings in this album. But then, you know, with the songs, it's nice because you add in all these other things as kind of accents and whatnot. And, you know, to me, this album does have a feel, an overall feel. Mm-hmm. I think there's a few songs that are, there's a few songs that I think are a little bit outliers. But overall, you know, it does kind of have a feel. Now, I thought it was kind of interesting though, because in an interview about the, about titling the album, you know, she said that she had signed her record contract and she had been talking to people and talking to friends. She just kind of felt like, you know, you got to produce now, right? You got to, it's, you got to do something. And almost like all this stuff was coming her way. And it was kind of like a tidal wave, essentially. And then she also said, though, she didn't feel like there should be a title for the album, because typically when there's a title, it follows like sort of a theme feel or something like that. And so it was kind of like a fun play on words for her. Yeah. You know, it was just like calling it title and it's title. So, but I do feel like there is a theme, especially lyrically. I mean, you know, and I do actually, and I think it comes through musically, a lot of kind of ups and downs and mm-hmm. peaks and valleys. So it just seemed like there was a lot of highs and lows, not only within this relationship that kind of helped inspire this and what she had gone through personally, but, you know, it comes out lyrically and musically as well. I feel like there's songs that, you know, they start very subtle and then boom, and then something big happens and then we take it down a bit. Right.
Yeah. And I think it would have been interesting, because just thinking that of what she probably came with, and I mean that in terms of the development of the songs and, you know, where she was at with that, and then what the producer and the musicians did, it must have been an interesting kind of canvas to work with, because you have somebody who's a kid and maybe isn't going to jump in there and be like, all right, I want the vibraphone here, the fan speed should be turned up about halfway and slowly. So, you know what I mean?
No, like, she's like, this is what I got, you know, I'm going to let you shape it.
Have at it.
Well, this might be a good time to kind of get into the tracks. Do you think so, Grim?
I think so, yeah.
I think so. And maybe before we just jump in and do that real quick, though, we should remind everyone that we actually did a first impressions of her album Fetch the Bolt Cutters when it first came out. It's not a full-on review or scratch. I don't think so. Pretty sure. We could have.
I think maybe we did.
Maybe it's a full-on scratch.
Yeah. We don't even know, so you got to find out for us and tell us.
Look, we are over 200 episodes in, which is kind of crazy to sound or say, but it when you hear that,
crazy too. But
it sounds crazy. So yeah, so if you guys like Fiona Apple or other people, other bands, which I'm sure you do, if you're listening to this, like, check out some of our other stuff and give us a like and subscribe.
Like, subscribe, comment below. And comment below. Well,
let's go into the tracks. So Grim, first track. So side one. Side A, disc one. Don't even
get me started on it. There's no reason that could not have been on a single vinyl.
There's no. Yeah. Sleep to Dream. now, first of all, I found some almost like, I think it was this song, some conflicting information where it was like on the album, it says it was, I believe, the first single. If you look at the album wiki, it's the first single. If you go to the song part of the wiki, it says it was the second single. And then later on in the song part, it says it was the third single. So I don't really know, but I imagine it was a single, whether it was first, second or third, it was a single.
I know that at the time that this came out, I was, ooh, we got some thunder out there. I was 15 years old. Right. So not in at that time, you know, all you had was, I guess, like MTV, if you just wanted to watch that all the time and, you know, whatever, and maybe Rolling Stone and Spin or something to be plugged into what was going on with music. But like, I really did not become aware of her with these early singles, even though I wish I would have, because Sleep to Dream is an awesome song. Really good way to start the album. I wasn't really aware of it until Criminal.
Yeah.
I'm going to blame it on being a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was it for sure. I mean, dude, the music video is what did it.
Yeah.
That's how I found out about it. Now with Sleep to Dream, one thing that I found interesting, like, is the way it starts. Like, it's like, dude, what is that noise or that sound? It sounds like they're like almost like it's like doo, 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 doo. Like they're like hitting a drum, but it sounds like they like slowed the tape down or something.
Oh,
like,
yeah, it could very well be.
I mean, it's just this weird kind of intro sound with some percussion.
In 96, would they have still been on tape? I don't know.
I mean,
either way, they could do what, I mean, it could definitely be that. So I guess it's kind of a moot
point. I mean, but it is cool. Yeah. The song album starts off with that. And then, you know, she starts singing and it's very bare bones to begin with. And then all of a sudden, boom, like everything comes in at once. And it's pretty cool, man. I really like the way that, you know, this song just, you know, it starts off the album nice. Her voice, the way she's singing this is very deep and mature and rich. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it kind of gives you an idea for what you have ahead.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot of those elements that come up throughout the album. There's vibraphone in it. There's Chamberlain in it. It like kind of has it sort of really, sets the tone nicely for a lot of the different things that you're going to hear in the rest of it. I agree.
Yeah. Well, now the video I found it. Again, this song came out, from my understanding, before Criminal. Mm-hmm. But if you watch the video, our Stefan Sednoui, he directed it, from the director series. And I actually found it very similar in a sense
to the Red Hot Chili Peppers video.
Yes. No.
Were they like change bodies? And isn't that video?
I think, what did he do? He did Give It Away, didn't he? Give It Away.
The World? That's the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, that was Michel Gondry.
No, 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 no. Not Around the World.
Oh, sorry. No, not that Around the World. He did. I believe he did that Around the World.
Were they kind of like change bodies? And I think it was a clip from that video I saw where she's like laying there on that couch or something and it like shifts into another body. Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of.
It kind of goes, it is interesting. Well, it kind of goes to this like real 90s kind of like sort of neon effect. Like it's like her body glows and does this thing. And but it's interesting because if you look at like you watch that video and then you watch Criminal, it looks like it's like almost shot in the same house. Like there's like different colored walls and like this crappy like shag carpet on the floor and everything. Like it was just kind of fun. Funny. I was kind of like, oh, I wonder if this was like, you know, the night after the party or after Criminal or something like that, right? Like,
well, they're like, hey, we got the house for the weekend. Let's just keep shooting.
Exactly. Like, might as well. Yeah. We're on a budget here. Yeah. So
no, it's videotape. You just keep shooting.
Just keep shooting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So track number two, A Sullen Girl, which starts off very, again, this is a complete contrast to the way it begins to
however aptly titled.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Now, one thing I liked in this song that I noted about it pretty quickly is the use of the pedal steel guitar. That is a nice and interesting touch that I did not expect at all. And they use it very tastefully. Like that is an interesting instrument because used in the right way, it can be really trippy. Like think of Breathe by Pink Floyd. That's a pedal steel making those, you know, which you wouldn't necessarily think of offhand. And this one, but if you do it just a little differently, like it adds twang like right now.
Sure, definitely. Well, and, you know, I kind of mentioned that in this earlier, you know, about that incident when she was a kid. And, you know, although she says she doesn't directly reference it in her music.
Yeah.
there's a few lyrics here where it's like, they don't know I used to sail the deep and tranquil sea, but he washed me ashore and he took my pearl and left an empty shell of me. I mean,
you could take that a lot of ways, but yeah, for sure.
A lot of ways, but yeah. So anyways, great lyrics in very different than the first. She sings much lighter in sound and everything. It's pretty cool just to see, we get two tracks in and you just automatically see the versatility.
Yeah, I agree. Now let's talk about the third track, which was apparently the first single.
Her debut single.
Now, yes, that's interesting to me because I guess in the 90s, we're thinking about what music was like, and a lot of it had like some edge to it.
Yeah.
I always figured Criminal was the leadoff single just because that's the first one I knew.
I agree.
But if it wasn't that, I feel like it would have been Sleep to Dream, because those sort of have the edginess that I feel like where people be like, oh yeah. But in a way, by making Shadowboxer the first one, you're almost thinking more like a real serious singer-songwriter. You know what I mean? It's just sort of a different, great, excellent song, but it's just a completely different vibe, I guess, than the other aforementioned tracks.
Yeah. Well, this one, it's kind of funny because there's times where I've heard this song and the piano in the beginning, especially there's parts of it that remind me of Criminal. Like when I listen to this song because I think it's because, it's more like the way it's played and also her voice. Again, she sings with such like attitude and mature. Like an 18-year-old's voice should not sound like this at all.
Yeah, like, nor just, should their songwriting like that's.
Yeah. But the song, it builds, really nicely. I mean, it's pretty heavy and thick throughout.
Yeah.
But definitely, still builds really nicely. And then, she just kind of brings it up another level.
Now, I will say, in response to your previous comment, I can see why you say that there are parts of it that remind you of Criminal. But the interesting and very notable difference, I think, is how much darker Criminal is, like musically. Like there is similarities in cadence in a lot of things she's doing, but Criminal has this, and I guess it's a good time as ever to go because that is the next track.
It is the next track.
There is a certain darkness, and I like how she does some because the way they carry that, like the drum beat and the bass and everything, just you already have such a solid groove that she can just kind of hammer on and like hit the core, like the little dissonant chords on top. I love how dark that song and the way they play with the attack and stuff on the Chamberlain. It almost sounds like it's reversed at times.
I mean, first off, like we've talked a lot about music videos and stuff.
Yeah.
On this channel, we have.
We've already talked about them in this episode.
And there's, some of the great things about them is they can take a really good song or even a great song, and they can escalate it and they can make it unforgettable. And this one, this video. Man, it was very controversial. It rubbed some people the wrong way because they were here's the thing. They were not used to seeing a young woman sing like this, act like this in a sort of a provocative way. You can have asshole 80s rock stars like jumping around like dickheads on the stage and having chips videos of them like lying, white cotton panties, what's wrong with being sexy? But people were so disturbed.
Yeah.
That she looked so young.
And there was such a darkness about it. And that's the thing. That's where the music part comes in, because if it had been a happy-go-lucky song, it would feel very different than something so dark, aptly titled Criminal.
Criminal. Well, dude, I mean, she literally says, and this is so badass because it just shows the power of the woman. Like, basically, she says the song was really about, about feeling for, you know, feeling bad for getting something so easily and taking advantage of your sexuality to get whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like that's what it was. And I think people picked up on that real quick. Like there's not a lot of subtlety,
no,
you know, with it. And it's kind of like, yeah, I did that. And you know what? I'm good.
Yeah. Well, there's some feeling
remorse.
Yeah. Remorse about it.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. But there's a part of me that I felt like there's almost like a conflict of,
oh, sure.
Okay. I did it. I knew it was wrong, but it felt good.
Yeah.
You know,
do you that have a kind favorite of thing. Line in the song?
Oh, I don't know if I do, but it sounds like you do.
Dude, save me from these evil deeds before I get them done.
That's pretty great. I was going to say, do I have any?
That's a pretty good one.
I don't have anything written down.
Like, okay. I can't imagine writing that as a kid. Like, I would be like, I'm pretty much the best writer that has ever lived at my age.
We've got a writer here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. Should we move on?
Yeah.
Let's slow it down, Grim. Let's
like
slow
honey.
It down.
Like honey. Yeah. Now, now that's an interesting because you have that contrast in music and in like sort of subject matter. Like this is one of probably like the nice times or the, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, this song to me has a certain, in a very different way than Criminal, a certain like erotic, like tone. Ooh. And feel to it. Ooh. I do. But it's very similar.
So
I think
put
in
it
certain
on your
ways.
Mixtape.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
So it's very similar though, in certain ways, I feel like to how Sullen Girl starts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But when I hear this song, sort of the vision I get is like, if this song was in a movie, I could see the, you know, like the main character, the guy like going down to some dive bar, some lounge, and she's like the singer on stage. And just like all of a sudden the everything shifts to her as she's on stage and he's just like memorized by her. And like all of a sudden, you know, he falls in love with her like in that moment.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That's when I hear this song, like that's just what I see, man.
That's interesting. Okay.
I just think it really fits there. So but dude, yeah, with this song, you know, as with a lot of songs on this album, you know, things build and everything, you know, kind of like, you know, comes in and it peaks a lot of times, but I felt like this one in this song, they kind of kept it like, yeah, on the edge a little bit. It's kind of contained. Like we just get to the top and just when you think it's going to like boom or blossom, right. They kind of take it back down. It's like edging, right. It's just
yeah.
a tease.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Now I think, the next two songs, we're actually going to be one called The First Taste Never Is a Promise, but then they broke it up into two. No.
Okay, I was going to say, yeah, man, I don't know what article you read. I have not read that.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
I
feel like you put a comma in there and you got a sentence.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Okay. That's fair, man. Yeah.
No, but anyways, The First Taste. Yeah.
The First Taste. You know, I just thought there was one thing that's interesting is trying to read and, you know, understand like what she's saying in different situations. And, you know, just from like reading, hey, this was about a relationship that she was in and whatnot. But, you know, you can read into lyrics a lot of different things. But kind of when I was listening to it and reading it, it seemed like there was someone, this partner, this man in her life who she was, you know, she's willing to kind of do what her partner wants and she'll go along with it, but she wants him to like kind of work for it and show effort.
Yeah.
And like, you know, she's kind of putting herself in that position. And so one of the earlier lines is, I do not struggle in your web because it was my aim to get caught.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then the last line is, I'll let you win, but you must make the endeavor. It's like, okay, I'm going to give you what you want, but it's, you know, you're going to have to work for it. Yeah. You're going to have to show me something a little bit, yeah, you know, so.
For sure.
But, yeah.
Now, this was one of the singles too, which is interesting.
Was it? See, the list that I was about like four or five. I'm trying to think.
Six.
Six. Yeah. six. But yeah, I mean, but it also has criminal on here as the fifth, which is, that's criminal. Mm-hmm. That's criminal in itself. But this song also has, I felt like it's very different than what we've heard to this point in the album. Like it,
yeah, sure.
It has kind of a poppy feel, and even like there's like a beat to it and everything.
I believe it's the only one that claims to have programmed drums on it, which is interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Should we move on to comma?
Never is a promise. Yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just didn't want track six to be that long.
Yeah. We need at least 10 tracks on this album.
So you're going to have to put a comma in there somewhere.
Let's just split them up. But yeah, this song starts off, man. It's primarily, vocals and piano, and then there's strings in the background. I mean, it's a very sort of simple song.
It's funny though, because when I'm listening to it, I'm like, you hear the strings, but then you question yourself, like, did they really just make a string arrangement on the Chamberlain that sounds that good? but they did. They were real. That's why they sound good. Because I like it. The strings on those instruments are kitschy, but they cannot reproduce like the fullness and the beauty of actual string. Go figure.
Yeah. Can't do it. Can't do it, Captain. Yeah.
I don't have the power. Yeah.
Track number eight, The Child Is Gone.
This is like Innocence Lost, sort of.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's
growing up. You're at that period.
You're just growing up too quick. Well, you're at that point in life where it's like sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you do have to grow up a little quicker sometimes the bar eats you. Yeah. Sometimes you got to experience things before you're ready. Yeah. But I feel the song has an interesting intro. Then the bold piano comes in. I feel like it's kind of like a thing, right? Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah, that's her instrument.
It's very dramatic, and I prefer to have it, sound like that. I actually feel like it has a similar feeling to like Shadow Boxer, but it's like toned down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I believe there's a part somewhere in there. I thought I heard a mandolin. So I don't know if you heard that, but I do believe there is a mandolin in there somewhere.
Really?
Yep.
I don't know if I see the credits for that one.
No.
Oh, sorry about that.
Well, listen for it. Listen for it next time.
Well, I will. And one thing I noticed, and it could just be a guitar being strummed in a certain way. And the only reason I say that is because it's interesting, because we think of so much of the music that kind of lies in like the rock genre or anything sort of branching from rock and roll is driven a lot by guitars. And even if the guitar isn't the primary instrument, it's usually there. And it's really kind of cool to hear something that has just these really interesting textures and songs that are not built around that. And not even not built around it, but not having it really in there much at all.
Yeah.
Because there's only a couple spots where it's you can hear it audible, and it's prevalent. Credible. Yeah. And it's credited.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this song, I really feel like it's kind of her, in that transition period from going from child to adult a little bit and trying to figure out where, she even says in the song or lyrics, I'm trying to find a place where I belong or find a place I belong. Where do you fit in the world? And I really feel like, that's what's happening. And, she even says something like, cause there ain't no kind of loving, that can make this all right. It's almost like someone trying to be there for her and console her or try to make it better. And
She's like, no, man, sorry.
There's nothing you can do,
Yeah.
Nothing you can do.
It ain't like that.
Nope. All right. Number nine,
Pale September.
September. Dude, this song has a darker tone, but it's different than the other ones. This one, I feel like it's very mysterious.
Dude, and the vibes, if I'm not mistaken, this is the one where the vibes are really thick.
Yeah.
Really mess with that fan speed.
Yeah.
By the dude. That's where it's at with the vibraphone.
That's where it's at. Yeah. Two turntables and a vibraphone. You like that? That was pretty good, wasn't it? That was off the cuff. Mr. Grinch. I just feel like this song has a very, like, it feels disjointed at times.
Yeah.
It's very unsettling to me. There's something about it that I don't know if it's the rhythm or what exactly it is in the song. But when I was just listening to it again, I was like, man, like, there was a part of me, I was like, I can't tell if I like this song or not. I was like, there's a lot of good elements to it, but it made me feel uneasy for some reason. I don't know what it was. But musically it did. It was kind of strange.
Yeah, but I liked it well because a lot of it's built around dissonance and just, you know, some, and that is those intervals, those chords, they're just naturally unsettling. There's sometimes that music feels like it resolves and it's complete, and other times where it's like it asks an unanswered question.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And maybe this just doesn't resolve, or it doesn't resolve in the way I need it to be resolved.
Yeah. Now, before we go to the last track, dude, in looking at the credits, I really want to give a shout out because none other than the famous baker, you would know her for making a lot of pies in the store. But dude, Sarah Lee plays bass guitar on track 6 and 9.
So, awesome, dude.
Taking a time
out. Does Little Debbie play anything?
No. But taking a time out from making those wonderful key lime pies that you will find in the freezer section of your local grocer, Sarah Lee laid down some hot bass tracks.
Dude, super group. Fiona Apple, Sarah Lee, and Little Debbie.
And maybe Wendy. Dude,
there should be a
Wendy, too.
Dude,
and Wendy. She's the drummer.
Dude, you know how there was like, gosh, what was it? It was like, you know, Jimi Hendrix's band, like Jimmy James and the Blue Flames
or something like that.
Dude, what about Sarah Lee and the Little Debbie? That would be kind of sweet.
Yeah, I like it. Featuring Fiona Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fiona Apple on bass. She wrote this. All right. Last song, which is Carrion.
Yeah, but she says it, which I really like. Another play on words. She kind of says it more like carry on.
Carry on.
Now, do you know what the word carrion means?
I don't, but
it's adapted from the Latin word caro, which is meat, and what it means is the decaying flesh of dead animals, including human flesh, which is kind
of... So if you read that, this song is obviously going to be uplifting.
Well, yeah, but it's funny because that again kind of goes with the two meanings, because you have it like this relationship or whatever it is symbolic of this decaying flesh, right? But then you also have the other play on the word that is carry on, which is like just get on with life.
Cousin, get on with life.
Just, you know, get over it. Go out with somebody else.
There's somebody else. Okay. Yeah, don't watch out for that glass window. I think this song to me is a little bit of an outlier. It has a unique feel to it. Kind of reminds me of like First Taste at the beginning, almost like this sort of like hip hop feel a little bit to it. But then there's some very, I felt like in this song, as to the previous songs, there's some really like sharp transitions where it's like, boom, all of a sudden we're just like getting into there and all the instruments are coming on in. And I think it's a good way to end the album.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, especially at the end, a lot of the instruments, it just kind of builds and everybody kind of lets loose. Mm-hmm. And the guitar actually, like the electric guitar, rips a little bit.
Yeah.
Dude, it reminds me of like a George Harrison solo or playing that, okay. Man. It does. I just feel like it was a good way to go out with the album, because George you needed Harrison something sort of
like Revolver, kind of like loud, or George Harrison, like All Things Must Pass era,
probably more Revolver.
Okay.
Yeah.
just
more Revolver Harrison.
Okay.
I felt like, you know, you got to end this album with kind of something a little loud and punchy, right? Like, you know, so, and not with a whimper.
No, and it definitely does not end with a whimper. And I feel like the album actually goes by pretty quickly.
It does.
And again, looking at the times and where the potential division would be. I mean, yeah. Again, if somebody just wants to go ahead and put this on a single disc, you would have a purchaser.
Dude, at this point, we're lucky enough to have it on a double. So, yeah. Like, I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. If you can get Johnny Paycheck on vinyl, I don't know why they can't just put this on one. So
that's right.
In the moving dollar bin, no less. So you're scratched, dude. I think you're up since this was a dude special.
It was a dude selection. It was a dude selection. So if you've made it this far, congratulations. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And if you've not played this game before, this is where we choose what track we would scratch. Not because we want to, but because we have to. Now, this is a tough one to scratch. Like, what track? And
as only 10, most of these albums that we choose are, we don't.
Yeah.
It's like Kennedy said, we don't do these things because they're easy. We do them because they are hard.
Did he say that?
Yeah, I think it was.
He said a lot of things.
I think it was about the space program, but. Anyways.
Okay, yeah. Didn't really work out for SpaceX today, did it?
No, but dude, man, really missed.
Thank God no one's aboard.
Miss NASA, man. Damn shame about NASA.
Damn shame.
And MTV. I mean, shit, they both had their golden age together. Anyways.
Nice little program.
Shit, yeah. Yeah, shit. You could have been watching MTV in space.
So anyways, I would scratch Pale September. Again, like I said earlier, like, you know, I couldn't tell if I liked it or not. And it does make me feel there are some things that are unresolved, and I can appreciate that. But I feel like this album doesn't have a lot of songs like that.
Yeah, right.
And you know, I do like the variety, but there's something about it where, you know, I could definitely go without it, and I really like the way the album ends. So,
yeah,
I think that's where I'd go. What would you go with?
Well, I would like to keep it because I like its darkness and lack of sort of a very complete resolution.
He would.
Now, I would scratch Sullen Girl.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Sullen Girl.
Now, I know a lot of people would say, well, Grim, how could you do that? I mean,
WTIM,
you were already talking about how you like the pedal steel guitar. I do like that, but that's still a scratch.
That's fair. Favorite song?
That is a good question. Now, even though it was like the single, it's still for me Criminal, and it will always be Criminal, but. With that said, if you said you can't pick Criminal, I would say Sleep to Dream. Easily.
Okay.
And I appreciate the sentiment, dude, because when I go to sleep, I really don't want to be bothered with dreams. I really just want to focus on sleeping. So I get that 100%.
I'm going to hang out with Michael Stipe. And he wants to get his REM.
Yeah, I don't go sleep to dream, just like she says, man.
Yeah, I'd probably go with Criminal as well, but Shadowboxer is definitely a close second. Definitely a close second.
I thought you might. Just think of the potential transition from Sleep to Dream going right to Shadowboxer. That doesn't suck.
Yeah. It doesn't suck.
It's awesome.
I'm not going to WTF, but, you know.
I should hope not.
Yeah. All right. So, everyone, thank you for watching this episode. If you have not seen our episode on Fetch the Bolt Carters, you should definitely check that out.
Right after you do the obvious.
You know, and we definitely want to do some more Fiona Apple stuff because she is an extremely talented artist that I feel like maybe because, she takes so much time in between albums. She's kind of, fallen off the map a little bit. But I mean, dude, I thought Fetch the Bolt Carters was phenomenal. Yep. And I really hope she comes out with something soon. I'd love to see her live. I think it would be an amazing show. Like, she's got a great back catalog.
Yeah.
Come on, Fiona. Let's do it. Do it for the scratch track.
Yeah.
All right. Until then, it's time to go.
The Dude and Grim Show.
The Dude and Grim Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude and Grim, a
Additional music provided by Moore and the Timms. Copyright 2023. The Dude and Grim Show.